Jessica Lee, executive director of Safe House in San Francisco, talks about the tragic life of homeless prostitutes, often dependent on drug habits, years of abuse, violence, incest, and scorn by family and society. Lee explains how Safe House serves as a harbor of refuge and how the women are guided through counseling, nutrition education, computer competency, and vocational guidance classes. Innovative internship programs offer job skills training that often leads to permanent employment. Safe House relies on donations, volunteers, and grants, as well as assistance from San Francisco businesses. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at the Hilton San Francisco Union Square for a visit with Ms. Lee and Joe Licata, Hilton's Community Projects Manager, who's been a longtime avid supporter of Safe House.
Hi, Tom. I'm so pleased to introduce you to Jessica Lee. Jessica is the executive director of Safe House for Women. She has had that title for the last year and a half, and she succeeds Reverend Glenda Hope, who founded Safe House for Women in 1998. So she is actually the second executive director of that wonderful organization, and I'm going to let Jessica tell you who they are and what they do and who they serve.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. Tell us about your organization and what you do and the history.
So San Francisco Safe House was founded in 1998 by Reverend Glenda Hope, who's doing a lot of missionary work in the Tenderloin, primarily with the homeless population. And she saw that homeless women had a significant need and that some of them were being forced to prostitute themselves for survival. It was over a period of time when she was doing memorial services for homeless women who were prostituted and killed on the streets that she realized that there needed to be a safe place for them to go and services so that they wouldn't have to return to the life. So I'm happy to say that we celebrate our 18-year anniversary this year, and we are a transitional housing program and supportive services program still for homeless women in the city. And many of our women come from backgrounds where they're forced into prostitution or they were sold into sex trafficking. A lot of them come with histories of abuse or neglect, have been in the foster care system. And Safe House is really a healing and empowering environment for them to go into recovery services, to rehabilitate, and really just to find like a new path in life for themselves. And we're really proud of the work that we do. And we have 10 women who live at the house, and they're awesome. They're like the most courageous women I know.
Follows that you have people that are out on the streets making contact.
Yes, of course. So what we've seen, especially with the affordable housing crisis and the homelessness crisis in San Francisco, is that the population of people who are homeless nowadays has increased over the years, but also that we're seeing a lot of elderly women and adult women just on the streets because they're being evicted from their homes or they can't afford to live here even if they have a job. And so some of the work that Glenda used to do is a lot of street outreach, so actually going out and talking to women on the streets and giving them resources. And I'm proud to say that, you know, on Christmas Eve this year, we're going to be doing the same thing, but on a larger scale. And we're really happy to be partnering with the Hilton and Park 55, who are going to be donating toiletries and food for women on the streets.
The Safe House, as you mentioned, right now there are 10 women that are there, but it's not a permanent, it's a temporary transitional. So tell us about the ideal, where they go.
Ideally, I think the social justice argument is that anyone who wants to stay in San Francisco should be able to. And unfortunately, in the short term, a lot of our women are not able to. So either they move out of the city over to the East Bay, or they go back to SROs, which a lot of the affordable housing opportunities in the city are actually out of the same neighborhoods that they were prostituting. And so the rate of them just going back into the life is actually pretty high. Luckily, we've been able to get some of our women into roommate situations in the city, but what we're seeing is that many of our women are staying longer than 18 months, and it's just taking them a longer time to find housing. Many of them have mental health issues, as does a lot of people in the homeless community right now, and I think that's sometimes a barrier for them to get access to permanent housing.
And I imagine that another component would be retraining and job opportunities.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So a lot of our women can't really put together a resume for the last couple of years of their life. And so that's actually something that we start working with them pretty soon after they move in. So working with them to do resumes, telling them how to put together a cover letter, doing mock interviews with them. One of the things that I love about Safe House is that we have a client internship program where we partner with businesses and nonprofits across the city that will take on a Safe House woman as an intern. And we pay the woman a stipend and do the internship program, which is about 4 months long. And there they learn different skill sets. The partners agree to mentor and train them. And one story that I would like to share is that one of our women was doing her internship at a local candy bakery shop. They ended up hiring her afterwards. She became like a manager and a chef and just left that business last year to start her own catering business.
Wow, that's so wonderful. Yeah.
Yep.
Can you think of another success story that you're proud of?
Sure. So Safe House is really not just about rehabilitation and recovery, but it's also about helping women achieve their dreams. So another woman that we've been working with and who actually graduated a couple of months ago, her dream was to be able to go to college and be able to finish that. And she had grown up in a household where she didn't really have parents who could be there for her. And so she went into the military and then ended up not being able to go back to school. And so while she was at Safe House, she did do an internship with another restaurant in the city. And then she ended up enrolling for classes at a university in the Bay Area and is now well on her. She got her associates or is about to get her associates and is actually now on her way to getting her 4-year degree. I mean, she often tells us that she couldn't have done it without Safe House.
That's so cool. In what ways do you have a relationship with the Hilton, who is been so great at supporting everybody in the town?
Yeah, so Joe, as you all probably know, is amazing. So the Hilton is a really special and important partner for us. And a lot of times, you know, Safe House is a community for women where they're living. It's a residential program, right? So it's not actually like a shelter or the navigation center. The house looks like a regular house with living room, kitchen, you know, bedrooms. And so there are times I'll reach out to Joe and say, hey, we need new dressers or we need toilet paper. I mean, toilet paper is actually very expensive. And she'll come back and find that for us. Or she'll tell us about other hotels that are giving away things and we'll go and pick it up for free. I mean, it saved us probably tens of thousands of dollars over the last couple of years in just getting things that are solid. I mean, we don't like to put IKEA furniture. Not that there's anything wrong with IKEA, but you know, it doesn't last as long as some of the higher quality stuff. So they're a really great partner. And then for the holidays, they cater and basically do Thanksgiving, Easter, and Christmas meals for our women at the house. And it really gives them not just healthy food, but a way for them to come together as a community and share the holidays.
Talk to us about your staff and your volunteers.
So on staff, we have case managers for the women. We also have an operations manager who's in charge of facilities, and we have residential counselors. So we're a 24/7 facility, so we always have staff at the house. We also have volunteers who come in and do different things with the women. We have a volunteer right now who's doing dance classes. We've had volunteers that do self-defense courses. We have volunteers that come and paint the house. We have another volunteer right now that's doing a lot of maintenance and repair work and actually teaching our operations manager, like, how do you change a light fixture? Or how do you install a door, you know, in a wall? Like, things that would cost a lot for a nonprofit. And, I mean, a lot of, actually, we actually have a wonderful woman right now who is a regular volunteer with us from the Sisters of the Presentation. And the Sisters of the Presentation, along with Glenda, actually founded Safe House. And so it's great that we still have that partnership.
Probably a real critical and central question is funding.
Yes, it is definitely a challenge for us. I think one of the reasons that Glenda created Safe House to be a place for adult women is that at the time there weren't really no programs for adult women. There's a lot of programs for adults in general, and then also a couple of different programs in the city for women with children. But really just a place for adult women was rare and hard for them to find. One of the things that Safe House also started doing was we accept transgendered women into our programs, and that's actually kind of a novelty because a lot of our transgender women were unable to get housing or services in other places in the city. And so in terms of funding, it's always a stretch for us. A lot of our supporters are individual donors. The faith-based community has been a really important partner. We do have some city contracts, as does every other nonprofit in the city. But it's been a real struggle. I mean, one of the programs that we like to start next year is something called Safe House on the Streets, which is really reaching out to women on the streets and giving them resources. We have 30 women on our waiting list right now, and that's 30 times 18 months is years of waiting to get into Safe House. And so in the meantime, we want to be able to provide those resources. And we actually have launched a campaign where we want to raise $50,000 in order to do that for women on the streets.
It goes without saying that part of the vision would be to have more than one house.
Yes, that would be the ideal vision. So if any of your listeners have houses they'd like to donate, that would be great. One of the things that we want to do is be able to provide affordable housing for our women in the long term, and even like shelter spaces. And we love to grow the program. I mean, we're not exactly looking to open a house that has 50 beds because we always want that homey feel. But having different houses across the city would be amazing.
Is that plausible? Is that in the vision?
That is one of the things that we've talked about, coming up with both short-term and long-term strategies for housing for our women, in terms of we do have a few of our long-time supporters who have agreed to donate their houses to us after passing on. It's like one or two people, but that's better than none. And that is really the vision, is for our women to be able to stay in the city. It's not just because they love San Francisco, but their community is here. Sometimes their children or their families are here. And to put them way out, you know, in Stockton or Modesto, it's a really long trek for them. And if they find a job here, it's even harder for them to be able to commute.
Your greatest challenge?
That's a great question. I think that our greatest, my greatest challenge in my job actually is when I started at Safe House, and I have a career working on violence against women issues my whole career for like over 10 years. And I think one of the most challenging things I found at Safe House when I first started was actually kind of working to understand the journeys of our women. And a lot of the stories that they shared about their past and their situations are things that you would see straight out of like a Law & Order SVU episode. And this is me coming from working with domestic violence sexual assault survivors for years. I mean, they've been through so much trauma that I think one of the things that we do every day on staff is really taking care of ourselves, really helping the women understand their trauma and their struggles. I think the other issue is also being in such a wealthy city with so many resources. The other challenge that we struggle with is, why are there not enough detox programs or mental health services for our women? It's a constant struggle for us because we end up absorbing a lot of that work to the extent that we can for our women, but we're not seeing really an end in sight in terms of that.
Seems to me that community consciousness and awareness is critical and central to going forward.
Yes.
In what ways do you try and showcase and raise your banner?
So we do talk to different organizations and groups around the city about the issues. So we're actually speaking at a couple of churches between now and the end of the year to raise awareness to congregations about what's happening. We are also, there are propositions on the ballot that are going to affect our women. And it's something for us to think about when we're talking to the community about, well, like, how do we work with the homeless? Is having homeless encampments banned in the city necessarily a good thing? Because if it's banned, where would they go? And are there services for them or not? You know, so kind of just being, helping people be aware of that situation is one of the things that we try to do.
So discussion, talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just discussing it, really just kind of, I mean, I'm kind of a newcomer to San Francisco. I moved here a year and a half ago, and just like any other newcomer, I'm kind of just stuck in the middle of the challenges between, you know, the wealth and the poor in the city, and learning to walk that fine line.
Where did you come from?
Well, I grew up in New York City, and I came from Washington, D.C., where I ran a domestic violence organization for many years, and I moved out to San Francisco last year.
And what are the differences? What are the disconnects?
Well, D.C. is a very interesting place, as we all know. I think one of the things about being that's different about being in D.C. and San Francisco is that D.C. is a lot smaller as a city, and it feels a lot smaller, whereas San Francisco has a lot of government agencies and departments and a lot of people who work for them. So I think just navigating that process was a little bit different. I think just California being so democratic with, I mean, I think I spent 3 hours like reading through all the propositions yesterday. I think that's definitely different. I think just working in D.C., we didn't really have a voice in Congress. We don't, D.C. doesn't have senators. We don't really have a vote, you know, the way that other states do. And I think that, you know, being in San Francisco and being in California and having Nancy Pelosi as a representative for us, I think has actually raised the issue to a higher level.
I first became acquainted with Safe House through Reverend Glenda Hope many years ago. I really didn't know too much about this particular issue and the population of women that they support. And just getting to know her and understanding the work that she did, and also with her relationship with another organization that is sadly no longer a large agency here in San Francisco, is called SAGE, Strategic Alliance Against Global Exploitation, and their former executive director, Norma Hotelling. Just knowing about that connection and the women who were getting out of the life of prostitution, recovering from terrible sexual abuse and trauma. And Jessica talked about some of the clients that she's worked with and the stories that she has heard. And I agree. I mean, once you listen to the life stories of some of the women that have come through Safe House, it is unbelievable. And there are stories that resonate and stay with you for a long time. One particular young woman who was brought into Safe House through their work with, I think, the prison system and also the district attorney, didn't know her own birthday, didn't know what name she was born with. And the day that she arrived and was getting help from organizations like SAGE and Safe House, they gave her a birthday party, and that became her birthday. I happen to know about that because we provided the birthday cake. I'll never forget that, and I think that happened about 18 years ago. That was also the day that she decided on naming herself, and she got a Social Security number. But this woman had been sold into sexual trade from the age of about 2 years old. These things are unbelievable. The stories are incredible, but on the other side, it is so heartwarming to know that there are people like Jessica and organizations like Safe House who embrace these women, who nurture them, who give them a place to recover, to be with others who have suffered similar trauma. And for us to be able to work with her in the smallest ways, I mean, helping her source product, supplies, it's the least we can do. It's the least we can do. Providing a meal for a holiday, it's the least we can do. Because these women, even what they've suffered, they're coming back into society as women who want to contribute. And many of them, and we've heard these stories, want to give back to Safe House, too, and the organizations that they've come from. So the fact that Hilton San Francisco Union Square has had a community relationship with Jessica and the Safe House organization puts a human face on us. It helps us find our humanity too. We're very proud of that relationship, and we're certainly very proud of Jessica. She doesn't look like she has been anywhere working for 10 years, and this young, tiny little woman here is a powerhouse. So we're very proud to be associated with her.
My name is Jessica Lee. I'm the executive director of San Francisco Safe House. And our website is sfsafehouse.org if you want to make a contribution.
Thank you so much. It's just been a pleasure and an honor to meet you.
Thank you.
The underbid music, Stone Mirage, was performed by Carlos Nakai.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Melissa Corbin reporting from Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUA. They are.